Already controversial, Ethiopia has started generating power from its Renaissance Dam. What does it mean for negotiations between neighboring countries? Who stands to gain or lose? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Sami Zeidan. Ethiopia has begun generating power from its Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. With the new source of clean electricity, Addis Ababa hopes to charge its economic development. But the project is not sitting well downstream. The giant hydropower dam is built on the upper part of the Blue Nile River. It's been a source of controversy from the time the first brick was laid a decade ago. For Sudan and Egypt, the Nile River's waters are a lifeline for millions. Both governments say the dam threatens their access to water and are demanding a legally binding agreement to protect their interests. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says there's nothing to worry about. He calls the dam an opportunity for all countries in the region.
The downstream countries, the brothers, the people of Egypt and Sudan, the water will flow, and the world must know that the dam will not affect them. All that was said about Ethiopia seeking to prevent the flow of water is untrue, and we will not allow the people to starve or thirst. These are our principles and our position, and we affirm the flow of water to the people. From the dam is to develop and bring 60 million Ethiopians out of the darkness. We seek integration between the three countries and a real partnership.
Well, commenting on Ethiopia's announcement, the Egyptian Foreign Affairs Ministry issued a statement saying, after the previous unilateral start of the first and second stages of filling the dam, the Arab Republic of Egypt affirms this step is a further violation by the Ethiopian side of its obligations under the 2015 Principles Agreement signed by the Ethiopian Prime Minister. We'll begin our discussion in a moment, but first let's bring you up to speed on Africa's largest hydroelectric project. Construction was started in 2011 under the late former Prime Minister Meles Zenawi. Civil servants contributed 1 month's salary towards the project for its launch. The government has since issued dam bonds aimed at Ethiopians at home and abroad. The cost of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam is estimated to be close to $5 billion. By harnessing the force of water, Ethiopia aims to provide electricity for 70% of its people. Many of them don't have electricity at all. Filling the dam's vast reservoir began in 2020, hitting a target of 4.9 billion cubic meters by July that year. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed says the project is scheduled for completion in 2024. Let's bring in our guests. We have joining us from The Hague, Adam Kese Abebe. He's the program officer at the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. In London, we have Alam Ahmed, president of the World Association for Sustainable Development. And in Somerville, Alex Duval is executive director at the World Peace Foundation. Welcome to you all. If I could start with Adam. So does the beginning of operations at this dam indicate the project is on track and heading for success?
Absolutely. The project has been on track for a while now. It has been delayed and it has generated a lot of extra costs. And of course, it has been politicized, but it's making steady progress.
Alam, will the project complete as expected in 2024? Will it produce, I think it's like more than 5,000 megawatts of electricity? How's it looking?
I think the question of completion, no one can know the answer for that, because there's lots of issues going on. There's lots of legal challenges. The land itself is still disputed. And the situation in both Sudan and Ethiopia is not settling down. So it's a big question mark. But at least now we have seen the production of one turbine producing megawatts. So it is on track to produce and to complete. But when is quite a big question. No one really can tell. Particularly, no one knows the technical. What is going on in that dam really is quite difficult. to tell. No one has seen the engineering, if you like, paperwork of that dam yet.
All right, but now it is switched on, Alex. Is it giving us any clearer clues about its impact on other countries?
I think that really remains to be seen. I think Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was absolutely correct in saying that there is no reason why the operation of the dam should affect the downstream countries. In fact, it could be to their advantage because it can regulate the flow better. Because it's a hydroelectric dam, it is not actually using water for irrigation. And so the flow should be unimpeded and should be better regulated. And because the water is stored at a high altitude in the Ethiopian highlands, there will be less evaporation than in the lowland lakes of northern Sudan and Egypt. That said, the context in which the dam is becoming operational is very different to the context in which it was conceived 10 years ago. It was the brainchild of the late Millas Senari. It was the jewel in the crown of the developmental state. And the reason it's called the Renaissance Dam is that that is a shout out to the principles of the African Renaissance, the idea that the African states should band together for collective development, for integration, for cooperation. Now, what has happened since then is two transformations. First of all, the developmental state has been abandoned and reversed, and there is a big question mark over the economic future of Ethiopia. And secondly, the political and diplomatic context has been transformed so that instead of Ethiopia being embedded in an alliance of African nations that actually put Egypt in something of a diplomatic corner, what has happened is that alliance has been dismantled by Prime Minister Abiy, including resulting in the antagonism that exists between Ethiopia and Sudan. And Ethiopia is now becoming very dependent on its Middle Eastern patrons for money and weapons, notably the United Arab Emirates. So it's a very different political context in which there's a lot of turmoil and a lot of distrust.
All right, so it is changing more than just the developmental situation for Ethiopia and the region. Adam, how will the operation of the first turbine, do you think, how will it impact that deadlock in talks between Ethiopia on the one hand and Sudan and Egypt on the other?
One point to add to what Alex Deval said, and he's right that the context has changed fundamentally, but the Ethiopian position, the Ethiopian idea towards the dam and how relevant it is, and also how it perceives it will affect downstream countries, hasn't really changed. So the context has indeed changed, but how the dam itself is perceived and the interest and desire to see it to completion hasn't. That is one. In terms of, you know, how the dam and the progress that has been made can change relations, perhaps it's important to say that if you look at how the three countries have approached this particular relationship, it's perhaps a reflection of how they see the politics in their own countries. The politics in each of these countries is often founded on mistrust. It is founded on sort of winner-takes-all politics, and sometimes even of conflict dominance. And so that mistrust that we see at the domestic level in each of these countries is actually reflected in their relationships with each other as well.
So now that they hit the on switch, Adam, how will that impact the distrust? Is this going to encourage countries to at least start resuming talks, or the opposite?
Well, it is necessary. They have to talk. They have differences. It's important to note that they have made a lot of progress. There's two key issues where there's still a lot of stickiness, particularly in terms of how, in case of an unfortunate drought situation, how the water will be managed, particularly on the duties of Ethiopia to let go of the water and even some of the stored water. And also in terms of how, in case there are disputes in terms of the principle of equitable distribution of water and of causing no significant harm can be resolved. But they have to talk. It's necessary. And the progress they have made so far, I think, despite the fact that there has not been any major breakthroughs, they have actually worked together, and there is a sense of developing trust among these countries. And so I think it offers a possibility for transformation.
Do you agree with that? Is there a sense of progress being made? I mean, when you look at the history of these talks, it seems like the parties are stuck on some of the same points: drought management, third-party arbitration, and future adjustments to the agreement. They've been arguing over that for years, haven't they?
Yes, that's correct. And I think the key issue here to remind your viewers here, Ethiopia has been playing the politics sophisticatedly here. Number one, in the last 2 years, if you remember, all of you, Ethiopia have used the opportunity. They're very opportunistic. I know this might sound negative, but it's true. When Ethiopia found Sudan in the last 2 years in serious trouble internally, they try to maximize anything dramatically will not be reversed easily. Sudan has been going through a very difficult time. I think, frankly speaking, Sudan has no government as we speak. So there is no one at all telling or even talking to the Ethiopian now, because we don't have a government in Sudan. Secondly, Ethiopia, you can see the way Abiy Ahmed is talking now, he's talking about more of a carer, someone who really take care of Sudan and Egypt, and talking about it's not going to affect them. He's changing the tone. If you look last year and the year before, the tone was more of threatening, we will do what we want. Now it's more of, don't worry, it will not affect you, it will regulate water and so on. Number three, also, the geopolitics of the region has also changed. I agree with Alex. If you can see, the American envoy to the region is now more of residing in Ethiopia rather than, and he just make visit to Sudan. So they have somehow behind closed door, which we all don't know, the American are quite significant there. And I agree also with Alec, the involvement of Emirates, United Arab Emirates, is also changing the game now in this disputed area. But to go back to your question about the history, we have been here before. There are things we continue to be standing out. Number one, Egyptians relying almost 97% on this water of the Nile. So it's for them, it's a survival issue. The same Ethiopian, they see it as a survival project. The Egyptian, they see the water from the Nile as a survival project.
Right.
Egyptian have managed to integrate very well with Europe, and they are exporting. In London, I go to supermarket, I buy lots of fruits and vegetables from Egypt. So Egyptian cannot take any risk on that agricultural productivity to be hindered or being affected. It's a serious talk here.
Right.
Sadly, if you follow last month, the Egyptian prime minister was urging Ethiopian again to sign a binding agreement or any legal document. Ethiopian didn't. Sudan in the past have been asking for any technical, sharing about what is going. Because you can't keep saying it's not going to affect Sudan, it's going to regulate the water. Okay, we have experts from Sudan, but they want to see this documentation. I am an expert in water. Why not you show me? I have my engineers. Show them. And more finally, we haven't seen any independent evaluation. I have been, and many others, calling internationally for an independent technical review of the dam makeup. And there is not a single independent review. So this all make it as a classic example. And
right,
just
so
bringing the last
still,
that point you mentioned earlier,
right, there's,
Sammy,
there's,
about
yeah.
for Ethiopia, it's a survival project.
Right, and there's clearly a lot of progress that still needs to be made in addressing the same points. What is the bottom line, Alex? Does hitting the on button of the dam make the chances of conflict less likely or more likely, do you think?
I think there are two issues that need clearly to be separated here. One is the technical issue. And in principle, technically speaking, the dam is a win-win situation. It can make the water management of the Nile Basin more rational to the advantage of all the riparian countries, especially in the context of climate change and the greater fluctuations in rainfall and river levels. There's no doubt about that. The real problem is one of trust. And the Egyptians understand the technical issues perfectly well. Their concern is that in the case of a political dispute for some other reason between Ethiopia and Egypt, Ethiopia now has in its hands a weapon. It can actually block the flow of the Nile should it want to. And that is the existential question. And no treaty, no signature on a piece of paper is going to be sufficient to persuade the Egyptians that there are no circumstances under which Ethiopia will not use that ultimate weapon, as it were.
Can there be any solution to that sense of vulnerability?
The political has really shifted, which is that Ethiopia today is much, much weaker than it was a few years ago, because it has become diplomatically much weaker, but above all because it's economically weaker. The country is in a major economic crisis, with its bonds trading as junk, with a practically drying up of foreign direct investment, bad relations with all its aid donors, facing a major food crisis this year. And I'm sure that is the number one explanation why Abiy Ahmed has tried to reconcile with the Americans, whom he was condemning just a few months ago, while he went cap in hand to the European Union, AU, African Union summit just recently, and why he is also adopting this conciliatory language. He needs the money, and he understands that this is a good, this approach, this much more conciliatory approach, is a way of getting that, and it may well work out to the advantage of all.
Adam, it sounds like, listening to our other guests, that really this may continue to be a source of conflict and a source of generating fear for Sudan and Egypt, no matter what guarantees on paper the Ethiopians are or are not willing to give.
Well, I think so. You know, first, it's important to recognize that the Egyptians, the Sudanese, have genuine interest in what is happening in the building of the dam and its operations. I think that's very important. But secondly, it's also important to recognize that Abiy Ahmed, when he came to power, the first thing he did was actually travel to Egypt and assure them that there will not be any consequence, any significant harm to their interests. So to say that Abiy Ahmed essentially sweet-talking them now because the country is in trouble, I think it missed the point. That's one. And secondly, you are right, and I think that's the point I was trying to make earlier, was that the countries, in terms of how they relate to each other, has been defined by the same kind of mistrust and winner takes over politics that characterize their politics at home. And as they're making progress now, and as I said, there has not been any breakthrough, and there are still certain important sticky points. But the only way to develop trust is actually to work together. And the only way also to prevent a scenario that Alex spoke about, where Ethiopia could essentially block the dam, is to connect the countries even more. I think the Nile it's a geographic, it's a historical umbilical cord that connects the country, and it potentially can transform not just the relationship around the river itself, but the relationship among the countries. And I think only that integration will guarantee, that's the safest bet for Egypt. Otherwise, even if there is an agreement, in the scenario that Ethiopia wants to hurt Egypt, it could still violate that particular agreement. So I think it's not a written agreement, as important as that is. It's not that will prevent any damage to the countries. I think it's an integration of the three countries and beyond that provides the safest guarantee for Egypt, for Sudan and the rest of the riparian countries.
Alam, there is a mechanism, isn't there, that's supposed to be handling negotiations to resolve the matter through the AU. Has the AU proved, though, that it's not very effective in managing this one?
Yes, Sami, the AU, unfortunately, it's not nice to say that, but has failed in many, many fronts in the past. I mean, they have been involved in this on and off, but they have not succeeded either to just even succeeded to bring these three people to so. I mean, the two points Alex mentioned them are the two sticking points. The Sudanese want to be assured technically is not going to flood and kill their people. And the Egyptians need to be assured there will not be any time where the Ethiopian can stop or reduce their share of water. So how do you resolve this? Simply, it has to be a legal binding agreement. I know there is a lot of historical agreement between Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Let's forget all that. Sign one now, where it can simply saying Ethiopia in the future cannot change or reduce or do anything or block water from Egypt, and then Sudan will need to be given the opportunity to evaluate and see and be assured this dam is going to bring them lots of benefit, such as regulating of the flood of the water. It will minimize flooding, blah, blah, all this point. Unless this is being happening, I don't think it will happen. African Union, unfortunately, has proven from time to time its failure. There's lots of geopolitics in Africa itself. And I think the fact Abiy Ahmed is very significant within the African Union. Again, the Egyptian president is quite significant in the African Union, which left Sudan out, particularly when you have three parts. One of them is quite weak and two are very significant. You can't get to a legal agreement. So I think, in a simple answer, the African Union had failed, and I don't think it can resolve this issue as soon as possible, which we all wanted. And also, don't forget, we are talking about one of the largest...
Can it be resolved, Alan, without greater buy-in continent. And involvement by world powers, who right now, frankly, might be too busy with what's going on the Ukraine-Russia border?
Absolutely, you're right. I think this is the other thing. The rest of the world is very busy with many things. I'm sure you follow the geopolitics in the UK, in America, and so on. Sudan, unfortunately, now is more of a start to be neglected by the rest of the world. Egypt is having their own agendas now. So I think, yes, the right. pandemic, other geopolitics, other important issues
is taking attention away
from really
what's going on.
Not really on the side
there.
Of helping these right. countries to come to a table.
Well, we've just got a few minutes left. I'm going to try and bring Adam back in and say, how realistic are the expectations that this could be a game changer for the whole continent? The Ethiopian talk about this will provide electricity not only for Ethiopia, but for Sudan, for Kenya, for other countries.
Well, so quickly, I think so. You know, the African Union indeed has not been able to secure an agreement, but I think we have to recognize that the primary responsibility lies on the three countries, and if the three countries are not willing to compromise, then there is very little that the African Union can do. And you know, the United States has tried it, Russia has tried it. You know, superpowers have the potential to influence the direction of the agreement, but ultimately the responsibility for success or failure of the negotiations lies with the three countries. Right. In terms of its potential, I think it's massive. You know, economically, it's going to generate more than 5,000 kilowatts of energy, and part of that will be exported to Sudan. There is already process going on. And of course, I think that symbolically, the ability of a country to self-finance a massive project as GERD, I think it sends a massive signal for the continent in terms of self-reliance.
Right. Let me bring
and so it is an economic opportunity right. and a social opportunity.
Potential
as well.
Game changer. We've got a minute, though. Alex, do you agree with that? Could this be the project that turns Africa into an electricity exporter, even to Europe, are some of the claims from Ethiopia?
I think what this does, what this crisis does and the potential does is it refocuses attention on the need for an integrated economic and political and peace and security architecture, not just for the Horn of Africa, but for the Horn of Africa and the Middle East. And that is a challenge that was encapsulated in the original conception, the Renaissance of Africa, which has to be now, you know, 10 years on, be reinvented for the current situation of turmoil and disorder.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time. But let's thank our guests, Adam Kasi Abebe, Alam Ahmed and Alex Duval. And thank you, too, for watching the show. You can see it again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, head over to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. From me, Sami Zeidan, and the whole team here, for now, it's goodbye.